From Variety, celebrating more than 117 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
Look, man, we're all fucked. You know what I mean? We're all, when I say fucked, I'm not saying your son's fucked. I'm saying we've all got issues, you know? Human beings are on the spectrum. We're all, the spectrum of humanity is a obviously multifaceted and very complex spectrum. So some are more so on spectrums than others, of course, and there are clinical diagnoses for some things, but there should be a clinical diagnosis for the condition of being human.
Colin Farrell just landed his first ever Oscar nomination for Best Actor for playing Parik, the milk farmer with a lovable donkey, in The Banshees of Inisherin. I'm Clayton Davis. On this episode of the award-winning Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to Colin Farrell about his role in the Martin McDonagh dark comedy. He also discusses what's next for him, which will include him reprising his role as Oz, aka the Penguin, in the upcoming TV spinoff of Matt Reeves' The Batman. He also provides some exclusive details. Also on this episode, a chat with Oscar-winning composer Justin Hurwitz from the film Babylon. But first, during the Award Circuit Roundtable, we're going deep into the Andrea Riseborough Oscar nomination controversy and the Academy's decision not to rescind her nod. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close.
Hey everyone, it's another edition of the Variety Awards Circuit Roundtable. I'm Variety TV editor Michael Schneider, along with Janelle Riley.
Hello.
Jazz Tankay.
Hello.
And Clayton Davis. Clayton just...
God, my phone is like going off.
What was that?
Did someone just call you an asshole in there?
No, it was like, because I was watching... I was listening to a podcast on the way here. When I went to turn my phone on silent,
that's what I heard too.
That's what I heard. Yeah,
I thought we had sound.
It did say asshole.
That was perfect timing. Yeah. I thought we had sound drops now.
No, like, that's what we do now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Clayton Davis, asshole.
Yep. Yeah, I was about to refer to you as Leighton Davis, and I was like, oh, that's too mean. And then someone called you an asshole, and I was like,
that's so much worse. I'm doing well.
I just thought that was Jessica screaming at you in the background.
I mean, that also, I mean, yeah, it was a home recording, guys. If I'm blinking, that means I need help. I don't know how we have a round table when we're also square.
Oh, you funny.
He's trying to take over the dad jokes for, mantle from Michael.
I am a dad, so that it's okay to.
You are, and you're a joke.
That's nice. Well done.
Okay, this is really weird because we're in four little boxes here on Zoom because I won't say who. Someone has COVID, so we're not in person. And the two diagonal boxes are wearing white hoodies, and then the other two are black shirts. And I'm going to take a picture and post it on Facebook, on Twitter, so you can all see.
Yeah.
Love that.
Because white is right, right? That's according to my anonymous Oscar ballot, Oscar voter talking about Andrea Riseborough said, because white is always right.
Wow.
Very timely.
Those anonymous Oscar ballots make me nervous to read sometimes.
It was the first time I would argue that the anonymous Oscar voter thing was put to good use.
Really?
Yeah, because I think they gave such insightful arguments into... which is probably our first topic today.
That's Andrea a good segue. Riseborough.
Yeah, yes,
good segue.
I mean, yes.
There's your segue. Andrea Riseborough's Oscar nomination will remain. So much has happened since the last one. We have to start from the beginning. That Friday, the Academy released this statement, which I call their version of the Comey letter, which didn't name names. It was just, you know, we've been made aware of something. We're going to look, I'm paraphrasing here, conducting a review into campaigns of this year's nominees. And then Tuesday came, and then they released a statement that did get specific and said, we received complaints or whatever about To Leslie. We haven't seen any campaign violations, but we did see some things on social media that did cause concern, and they will be addressed privately, AKA people are about to get kicked out. Not kicked out. They're gonna get suspended from the Academy.
Why privately now? Why did they make a statement in the first place? say when they were looking into something, I just thought, like, do your investigation and then tell us if you want.
Yeah, but that's why it's the Comey letter. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Thank you, James Comey. Yeah, they really shouldn't have said anything on Friday. That's probably their misstep. I appreciate that they looked into it. If for people that are, it's because it's the most inside baseball complaining of all time of how she got her Oscar nomination. My personal take is a lot of what is rumored to have happened is not something that I don't think happens all the time every season. I think their campaign flew a little too close to the sun. I think the one misstep was the specifics that were shared on social media that you only need 218 votes to get an Oscar nomination for acting, which is exactly true. And that's, it made it too of a numbers game. I now know how the producers of American Idol felt the year that Sanjaya kept going farther in the competition. even though she is not a Sanjaya.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Andrew Riseborough is very good. Yes. But I think it felt a little bit like that. Someone had infiltrated the Academy's nomination process.
God. But why? I just felt bad because it was.
Oh, she's a loser in all this. She lost so much.
Well, no, like, the one good thing is I'm hoping people will know her name and will seek out her movie, because I know some people who are, and then they realize it's a great movie and a great performance. And, like, you know, it just wasn't handled well. Like, it just wasn't handled well. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen such a rise to number three by someone in the rankings ever. Like, she's totally number three.
And also, even if there were people who were, like, actively saying things on social media about, you know, put her in the first slot or whatever, how is that on her or on the film company? The film company.
Well, it isn't on her. It is on the film company because the company didn't run the campaign because they had the money to run a campaign. It's on the people who shared it. Because, listen, it becomes the ever-growing argument. Mike, I think we talked about this once, you and I, like, just privately in a conversation. Like, do you, like, when you're voting on a ballot, are you, when you put the names on the ballot, are you actually putting at number one the person you believe is number one? Or are you giving the number one spot to people who you think need it because you think they need it to get in?
Yeah, it depends strategic people are.
And and the purity of Oscar is to not be strategic, is do what you want to do. Do what makes you feel like whatever you think is the best, that's what you vote for.
Well, at the end of the day, nobody is in the voting booth with you. So people like big
wait,
deal.
There are Oscar voting booths.
I swear they should totally make some though. That would be awesome.
I'm starting to think they should because you can campaign for someone. You can tell people to vote for someone when they're that ballot. Like movies like, you know, Green Book win and people are upset. So like nobody can force you to vote for someone. So if people voted for Andrea Riseborough, maybe it's because they wanted to.
And maybe because it's a good film or maybe she's great in it. Like,
what a concept.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there are like kind of three separate things that are happening simultaneously. I think that's what the big problem has been and what people were mistaken by. Like, people were upset that there were no Black women in the category. That's not Andrea Riseborough's fault. Like, she's one person, there were two Black people, so she doesn't equal two Black people. So we're making the assumption that Andrea Riseborough was number five. We're also making the assumption that Danielle Deadwyler and Viola Davis were six and seven. And I don't believe that. Based on what we see now, I think it was Jennifer Lawrence. I'll be honest. Brian Tyree Henry got in. They pair stuff all the time. It was probably Jennifer Lawrence.
And I talked about this, right?
Yeah. There's that. That's a separate issue, and we can have a discussion about the people that came out for Andrea Riseborough. While the spirit of it, I love that it's not about money and people came out and all that. We never see that for Black females in the industry. Valid argument. That's, again, something separate. And then when it came to Andrea herself, all people like that try to get Oscar nominations don't know the rules like inside and out. That's the job of a publicist and marketing people in the studio. They know the rules. So I think she is like an innocent bystander and just went through the process. And I feel terrible that she is the Academy's Pia Zadora.
No way.
In a way, in the looks of history.
Oh, she'll be associated.
She'll be associated. Like, we almost Will Smith'd her this year. Like, for the rest of time, we will ask her, like, so, about the time you got an Oscar nomination, people didn't think you really got one.
Well, I'm hoping this is not her last nomination, and at some point it will be a footnote. But yeah. But I it's too bad.
Well, and the other difference, obviously, is that, again, for people who have seen the film, they agree that it is deserving, right?
Her performance is deserving, yes.
Unlike Pia Zadora back in the day, where no one could argue that she deserved any. So that was just purely ridiculous, and it came out of bribing judges or whatever they were doing back in the day.
Also, the Academy can't police people who aren't members. So if I know a lot of people who sort of shared the tweet or the Facebook post that said, you know, hey, if I've known any Academy voters, please vote for Andrea. What's the rule to stop them?
You're bringing up the Mary McCormick of it all, right? So that's been
I wasn't going to name names.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that's been reported out. Like, sure. She, the ex-wife of Howard Stern, the current.
Oh, you mean ex-wife in the movie?
Ex-wife.
She played Howard Stern's ex-wife. Yeah,
clarify there.
Yeah,
and she was fantastic
in real life. You know?
Yeah,
married to the director. Michael Morris, right? Michael Morris.
Right. And of course she's supporting her husband's movie and telling
She's a civilian. Yeah. It's just like if Mike Schneider walked on the street and started screaming, you guys all need to vote for Glass Onion because it's the best movie that's ever been made.
By the way, I do that all the time for Ray Sehorn.
Yeah.
You know, it's if Ray Sehorn gets a nomination, that's on me.
That's 100% Mike.
He's out there with a bell and like a sandwich board.
But Michael is not a Film Academy member, so that's fine. The issue here is vague rules, particularly number 10 and 11. 10 talks about lobbying, is two sentences, does not define what that is. So that's problem number one. And problem number two, and this is where rules were actually violated. So I'm going to come into this part. You can't reference, according to rules, not saying that if you think it should be a rule or not, but the rules currently state you cannot reference the competition, air quotes. So once people like Frances Fisher, again, reported, it was out there, it's still out there, Instagram said, Cate Blanchett, Michelle Yeoh, Danielle Deadweiler, Viola Davis, they're locks. It's okay. We only need 218 votes. Put her at number one. That is right there. Boom. Done. Wrong. You can't do it. So that's why. The next step, when they said they'll do this privately, they're going to be suspensions. I imagine whoever did specifics like that will get suspended if they're actually an Academy member.
If they're a member, I was going to say. Yeah. So you know, you could still do that, Clayton.
I mean, I could.
I mean, that's part of your job is ranking.
Literally.
Yeah, and I mean, the conversation about, like, you know, there's Oscar pundits that do this, so what's the difference, you know? And, you know, people are on billboards spending hundreds of millions of dollars. Yes, we can talk about that. And people can tout a performance. Like, anyone that said, like, two Leslie's great, Andrew Riseborough is phenomenal, they're not wrong. They haven't violated anything. Once they say, don't worry, Cate Blanchett's safe, vote for her, vote for Andrea number one. That's when it becomes an issue.
That's your problem. So I have a question for you. There's been talk that now she could potentially win. What is your take on that?
Listen, you can infiltrate the Academy nomination process by targeting 1,302 acting branch members and making sure you get 218 yeses out of that. That's, I don't say that's easy because obviously
clearly not.
Yeah, it's clearly not. But obviously, like, you know, it's easier than now you have to get to 9,500 because everyone votes now. And I think there's morbid curiosity now. People are going to watch it. But also, and Jazz, you know better than anyone, as the Artisan's editor, 65% of the Academy are in the tech categories. You have to be incentivized to watch a movie. And two, Leslie's not nominated anywhere else. I don't think they're going to be making sure I pop that in. Right.
Well, although I bet of all the movies that were nominated for Oscars, that one saw the biggest uptick.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. It did. I think that was the story, or it was reported that, like, a lot of people sought that out.
Guys, when Mike Schneider sees it, that's when you know it's in the big leagues.
Because
Mike's going to come next week as the guys that saw two Leslie.
Well, let me ask
has
this.
Mike seen?
By the way, I saw most recently Devotion. Which is not nominated.
Thanks way after the fact, man. Sodi hates you now.
But I will now give a shout out to Devotion. Still a lovely movie.
Great sound, great production design.
Was that Family Night?
That was Family Night. Jonathan Majors, of course.
Beautiful score.
Yeah.
Beautiful score.
Yeah. So, but back to Andrea real quick. So, you know, we feel bad for her. On the flip side, we now know who she is. She's a little more of a household name. She's an Oscar nominee. It's elevated our conversation about this film that no one had heard of.
Yeah.
It's a trade-off because, yeah, she's been unfairly maligned, but there has been a lot more attention for her and for this movie. Do you think ultimately she comes out okay on this?
I think
it can get shed a little bit. Again, I think as long as people like us really clear this up for people that this is not Andrea Riseborough sitting and saying, I want an Oscar nomination, go do this. I think she was just like, tell me where to go and I'll go.
She killed a guy.
Listen, the most apparent question that I want answered. Now, I do love Andrea Riseborough, and for people like us inside baseball, we've known her for a very long time, right? She's a great actress, and we're glad that she has this moment. But how was she able to get the likes of Jane Fonda, Sally Field, Edward Norton, all these Amy Adams, Kate Winslet, all these A-listers to come out and bat for her? Not saying that like it was undeserved, but
how
other people don't get the amount of people that came out. I was like, we were making a joke, and obviously this is a joke, but I was kind of like, what tape does she have of everyone? Like, who killed someone and where does she know where's the body? Like, getting this magnitude of support is unprecedented.
A lot of she's worked with a lot of these people.
Sure. You know? A lot of people have worked with a lot of people.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, I don't actually know that she got so many more people than most people do. It's just that when she got the nomination, everyone was like...
Too expressive, though, to convey it and put it on social media. Yeah. That's never happened.
I mean, there's some truth to that because, again, inside baseball, we know that, like, people sponsor events or screenings and things like that. Yeah.
That's not new. But it's just the amount of... that it got... I always say film Twitter always thinks that they... matter and they can change things. The fact that it got out there and people were like talking about it, and I'll never forget being at the Critics' Choice Awards when Kate Blanchett won. Mike and Janelle, you weren't there. If you were sitting near me, you would have heard the noise that came out of my mouth when Kate Blanchett won and goes, Andrea Riseborough. I gasped. I was like, I'm in the Twilight Zone. Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah. My head was started spinning because I was like, what am I just hearing? Like,
I can't believe she said it was the first thing out of her mouth. And I was like, oh my God, like what is this Andrea Riseborough thing that's happening right now? So that's a separate question. Andrea Riseborough, glad she has her moment. I'll be interested to see what happens the next time that she gets to bat. But I do, and this is again, personal, like, look, I pray to God she doesn't win this year for the reason it will be an asterisk for like all time. People, it will never be accepted in like the world fully. There'll always be this,
people have very short memories.
Okay, tell Will Smith that.
I will in 5 years. I will.
Yeah. And Bad Boys. By the way, the Andrea Riseborough thing came as they announced Bad Boys, and I was like, no one cares, right? Like, no one cares about Bad Boys. We are just talking about Andrea Riseborough.
It's crazy how it
was crazy.
It really was the talk of the town. Like, everywhere I went over the weekend, or people who like aren't even, you know, into following the Oscars wanted to know what I thought about it.
I did CNN. Yeah. When I was on CNN, I was like, oh no, this is something substantial. Yeah. this is scandal after following Biden. Like, what are
my
you doing, guys?
Mother-in-law sent me a text message yesterday, and I made a joke about it on Twitter because I was like, you know, like, it's reached outside of our circle when like, you know,
when regular people start asking us about it that never talk to us. Yes. Yeah,
there were two Andrea Riseborough tweets, and I'm sorry, I wish I could credit the right people with them, that made me laugh. One was like, good luck finding her. Basically, because she's a chameleon.
Yep.
And the other was, can you describe, they were like talking to an officer, can you describe, you know, the offender? Well, she's very talented.
Very talented. But so yes, I can't wait to hear the nominees luncheon. Go ahead, Mike.
So I was going to say, I mean, at this point is it's kind of over now, right? The whole fun, the controversy, everything's sort of been resolved.
The Riseborough is or is not a nominee controversy is over. Now we wait to see what is coming next? Like, will those private things that are going to happen with, you know, members, will that happen sooner rather than later? You know, then obviously there's the reforms or the button ups of the rules that will definitely come after the ceremony, because that'll be their postmortem. But that's it.
We still have more than a month. Like, can we create a new controversy? Is there something else we can obsess
anybody,
over?
Anyone got any other questions about some nominees I made? We can raise them now, man. Because, like, goddamn, it was what a week. It's only been a week.
It was a long week.
So we're just back now to talking about the Year of Dicks.
Yeah. So good, by the way. Such a good short.
Really?
Yeah.
Such a good short. There, you know what's funny? Live action aside, a lot of the shorts are really good this year, but some of them were very questionable. But my Year of Dicks is great.
The animated shorts are great. It's funny. I go to the theater and watch the shorts. They would play them all together. And I go to short film festivals. I make shorts. I love shorts. And I see so many amazing short films. And there were years where I'd be like, these are terrible. Like, how did any of these make it in? And
they're very hit or miss.
Yeah. It's like some of them are some of the best you'll ever see. And then some are like just really.
Or like, oh my God, like this is torture. Yeah.
It's a good year this year, though.
Yeah.
There was one that won a few years ago that I could not believe even made the cut.
I'm pretty sure we have.
I think we're probably looking at the same movie.
What's coming next? So we have
big Oscar contender opening this weekend in my world,
which is
Knock at the Cabin. Hardcore M. Night Shyamalan fan right here. Love this movie.
I have not seen it yet. I did see Megan, though.
Megan's great.
Megan is my new favorite film of all time.
Mike, have you seen any M. Night Shyamalan movies?
I saw Dead People.
Good gap.
So M. Thrigan, you
M. Thrigan is it's so much fun. Like, I wish Hollywood just made things like that. It's like, it's such a weird comparison, but it's like RRR, because like it's ridiculous, but it's made so sincere, and you just watch it, and it's like, hell yeah, give me more of this. I always get worried about sequels, though. M3 Megan 2.0.
2025? And Morgan.
Yeah, it's got to be Morgan next.
And Morgan.
Oh, my God. On that note, I'm going to run. Bye.
We lost Jazz.
Your dad jokes killed her, finally.
I know. But, on the podcast this week, we have some amazing guests. One with a very heavy Irish accent that is a banshee from Inisherin, Colin Farrell, who is just Precious Cargo.
And the other?
The other is a Golden Globe winning composer this year, Oscar winner before, Justin Hurwitz of Babylon.
That's great.
Yeah. Very Colin, nice. By the way, and you know, we have to be journalists. We have to be unbiased, right?
No one said that.
But I've never interviewed Colin Farrell before. I've never met him in person. So I did for this, and it's a video podcast, guys. You can watch this as well. And he was sitting across from me, and it was like one of those moments. I was like, oh, I get it. People want to sleep with you. Oh, I get it. Like,
did you tell him that?
Yeah, I was like, I'm feeling the same thing. Like, I'm going to go home and tell my wife, like, listen, we have to have a talk. Colin Farrell is just
she gets
dreamy.
Oscar Isaac, you get Colin Farrell.
Yeah. But you know what?
It's interesting. And someone brought up Oscar Isaac to me because they were like, oh, didn't you feel the same way about Oscar Isaac? I was like, Oscar Isaac's got swag, though. Like, I'm not saying Colin Farrell doesn't, but Oscar Isaac, like, he looks at you and you're just like, you're looking like only at me. He makes you feel something. Like, Colin Farrell's like sitting there with like his shirt unbuttoned down, you know, mid chest. And then he's just like, yeah, you know, like just like so nonchalant about things. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm just the most good looking guy that's ever lived.
Yeah, nonchalant. Hey. Like, he doesn't know exactly what he's doing.
Yeah,
come on.
He knows.
That's a good segue, though. Speaking of segues, to talk about someone else on that list is the one and only Pedro Pascal.
Who's hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend?
And the Last of Us episode, please. Did you see this week's episode?
I have it. Can I ask you something? Like, as you're wearing an HBO shirt right now.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm bought and sold.
I was like, listen, started looking forward to Emmys, right? Started thinking about that because we're going to get there any second now. Do you think HBO knew that this was going to be like a contender?
Yes.
Or You think so?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think they've known for some time. And there was even buzz before the episode premiered from journalists who had seen the episode in advance saying, like, prepare yourself. In fact, my big complaint about the episode is apparently now it's spoilers to say that an episode made you cry. Or that you really enjoyed an episode.
Yeah, yeah, that's
silly. Or to say that Nick Offerman is in it. Like, yeah, all these people are raging about everyone. Spoilers.
So Nick Offerman, Murray Bartlett.
Yes.
I mean, they both, I don't know how they're going to have to wrestle for that guest actor Emmy, because maybe they can split it. Maybe they can, like, somehow submit them together as one unit. Because,
well, like they did with the Billy Elliot boys at the Tonys.
The Coen brothers, Joel and Ethan Coen.
Yeah, just I feel like that. Yeah,
same line.
You know, I will say, you can't do this, but I will say they have submitted SNL hosts together.
Yes.
As combos.
And they won once, right? Amy and Tina.
Yeah. But they're together on the same.
But those performances, Murray and Nick, they don't work with each other.
Yeah. Back to the HBO Emmy-ness of this. I don't know if anyone's hyper aware of this, but House of the Dragon, Last of Us, Succession's about to come. And I think they got one, like, juggle will be an Olympic art form of what they're going to have to do this year.
It's a high class problem over at HBO right now, is they have a lot of big contenders, and both in comedy and in drama. And it's going to be interesting.
And by the way, we still have the other Severance is coming back. Yellow Jackets is coming back.
On Paramount Plus with Showtime.
Let's have a good talk about that, Mike. Go ahead, man.
What is happening?
Explain it to me, please.
I've never been so aware that the existence of Yellow Jackets prevented something else from happening as it was, because I was like we just want to get this is not a good name, and this is just so we can keep Yellow Jackets somewhere in this conversation.
What are they doing? Explain it for people who don't know.
Michael?
So basically they've now put Showtime under the Paramount Plus banner. It's all sort of one entity. And the thing is, even the linear channel now will not be Showtime anymore. The linear channel will even be called Paramount Plus with Showtime. Now, part of why they're doing this, it's financial. You're basically on paper shutting down Showtime, which allows them now to write off a lot of programming. As we saw immediately, they canceled a lot of development. A lot of programming is just going away now. And just like with other mergers, like HBO Max Discovery, where they use that in order to take advantage of that one-time write-off and cancel a whole bunch of stuff. That's what they're doing now over there too. And it's sad, because it is kind of an end of an era.
We're not in the heads of marketing, obviously, but like, can't they just shut down Showtime and just merge it? Like,
no, but you can't just yet, because people are still spending a lot of money on Showtime, and you can't just cut that off, because that's a huge revenue driver still for the company. A lot of people spending a lot of money on that. So you get rid of that, and you're really just shooting yourself in the foot.
So are Showtime and Paramount Plus merging, or were they always owned by the same parent company?
Because they've always been.
It's Viacom, right?
Yeah, which is now Paramount Global. But for a long time, Showtime was a part of CBS. So when Viacom and CBS split, CBS got Showtime, and so
he got them in the divorce.
In the divorce. So when they remerged, suddenly they're all part of the same company again. And now Paramount. So Chris McCarthy, who's one of the execs there, who oversees all the MTV stuff and all those networks, also now has oversight of Showtime since David Nevins is gone. So
are they literally dropping the Showtime name for monetary reasons?
Yes, so it sounds like Mike just described. Yeah, for a tax write-off.
So they're not complete. I mean, they're not completely dropping the Showtime name, because they're now sticking
Paramount Plus with Showtime.
Yeah,
this comes back to even the Warner Brothers Discovery, when we got that first logo that was just pretty much like Arial font or whatever, or like someone used like clip art or whatever.
Could have been Comic Sans. Could have been worse.
I just want to talk about who, like, be in that room and just be like, guys, Paramount Plus with Showtime, that's it. That's the one we go with, guys. Yeah. Was it the first one out the gate? Was it you picked the name out of a hat? Because like it just there was something better that rolled off the tongue.
I think they should. It should be Paramount Plus with and Showtime.
I want a comma after plus. I want to really make
Paramount Plus fired. With and or Showtime.
With and comma, or Showtime. Paramount or short or Showtime question mark? Like we could just really like go. We could really make some out of this.
Whatever. You want.
When does this take effect? By the way, did they say a date?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I never know when stuff happens. Like
I don't know. I still got a
press just turn on my
today.
TV.
I got a press release today that still was just said Showtime, so it's coming, but I don't know why.
Just in the streaming like conversation, because it was interesting. Did you guys read about how Netflix is going to do the not sharing passwords thing?
I saw the headline and kind of had a giggle and moved on.
So I mean, just it's interesting. So like, you pretty much ask for like a temporary. You ask yourself for like a temporary password. For like 7 days if you're like at a hotel, because that was like the big question people had, like what if I'm traveling,
so you won't be able to sign in from different
well there are plans like for like one device, two devices, and four devices.
Okay, but most people have four devices to themselves, so yeah, this is gonna go great.
Oh, you're talking about more money. You're talking money. Yeah, the highest plan has four devices.
Yeah, this is all going great, so yeah. All right,
so me and Mike can't share passwords anymore. Yeah, we don't share passwords.
I mean, on one hand, I understand it is
not for Netflix,
like,
but
yeah. I mean, it's like I get it, but it's also like, come on, guys.
We'll see.
We'll see how much it adds to the bottom line.
Yeah.
Turns out these companies like money.
Maybe. What?
Go figure.
Wait, aren't we doing this for art? Because we want to make good television and movies.
Crickets.
Yeah, tumbleweed just passed through the room.
When I was a kid, I saw E.T. and I wanted to make movies.
Yes. All right, gang. On that note,
this weekend, go see Knock at the Cabin. Go see and watch Pedro Pascal on Saturday Night Live.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, that'll be good. And Coldplay is the musical guest. That'll be good.
Wait, is Coldplay really Coldplay?
Yeah.
I swear to God, I was like, wait, are they still making music? Yeah, I guess they are.
Pedro Pascal is so funny in the Nicolas Cage movie. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Yes, he was on my ballot. Yes.
From Nicolas Cage. Yes. So, like, I cannot wait to see this guy cut loose with some comedy.
Yeah. Oh, and I guess we can end here. What are you guys doing on September 2nd, 2023?
Feel like going to a trick question?
Feel like going to a Beyonce concert? Because she announced her dates.
Oh, did she know?
Are you buying tickets?
No, I won't be here. I'll be at Telluride. It's like during, like,
I was going to say, I was like, September is not a good month for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean those. I mean, Ticketmaster, checkmate. Go ahead, man.
Go with Jesus. I honestly don't think I'm going to be able to take out a loan that's big enough to pay for these tickets. So
you know, I mean, you have a house.
I was literally thinking about that when I saw that. I was like, yeah, there's no way I can afford that. I'm just.
I don't listen. I love a lot of people. I don't think there's anyone I love that much to want to see them live. For something like to spend that much money, just like I was there and I saw them live. I just don't think I have that in me. I love Janelle. I would go see Janelle live. I would pay for your show.
Yes.
Yeah. No, Mike, I wouldn't pay for your show. He's referring to Monet.
Yeah.
So. Clayton, you're going to regret saying that because you didn't live here when I was doing plays on the regular.
I know.
And once I get back up and start mounting my shows again, you are going to be required to attend. You're going to have to sit next to Justin Chang, sitting there going, what have I agreed?
That's a good person to sit next to. I'm okay with that. As long as
he
it's
was
Justin
a
Chang.
Great audience member. Yes. It was, but like all my actors were freaked out because they were like, why is a film critic from the LA Times at our 60 seat theater play?
Just want to let you know right now, headline, the day you get a Tony nomination, you know, how did this campaign tactic, you know, work out for Janelle Reilly in this?
They're coming
thing?
For you.
Coming. Yeah. Coming for you.
All right. I got to go pick up my son or he's going to kill me. So.
Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
After the break, Oscar nominee Colin Farrell. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, and I'm Clayton Davis. Colin Farrell is on fire. Aside from basking in the glow of receiving his long overdue first Oscar nomination for The Banshees of Inisherin, and delivering four acclaimed performances in 2022, he's gearing up to reprise his role as Oz, aka The Penguin, for the spin-off television series from Matt Reeves, The Batman, which he'll begin shooting on February 28th. In The Banshees of Inisherin, he plays milk farmer Parik, opposite fellow nominee Brendan Gleeson.
Now I'm sitting here next to you, and if you're going back inside, I'm following you inside, and if you're going home, I'm following you there too.
Now, if I've done something to you, just tell me what I've done to you. And if I've said something to you, maybe I said something when I was drunk and I've forgotten it, but I don't think I said something when I was drunk and I've forgotten it. But if I did, then tell me what it was, and I'll say sorry for that too, Colm. With all my heart, I'll say sorry. Just stop running away from me like some fool of a moody schoolchild.
But you didn't say anything to me. And you didn't do anything to me.
Well, that's what I was thinking, like.
I just don't like you no more.
You do like me.
I don't.
You liked me yesterday.
Oh, did I? Yeah.
I thought you did.
Distributed by Searchlight Pictures, Banshees was the second most Oscar-nominated film this year, receiving 9 nominations. Best Picture, Director for Martin McDonagh, Actor for Colin Farrell, 2 Supporting Actor nominations for Brendan Gleeson and Barry Keoghan, Supporting Actress for Kerry Condon, Original Screenplay, Film Editing, and Original Score. The movie is also nominated for 10 BAFTAs and 5 Screen Actors Guild Awards, tying for the most in history. We sit down with Farrell to talk about receiving his first Oscar nomination, as well as his bombastic year that included acclaimed performances in After Yang, 13 Lives, and The Batman. We began by talking about how this year and this nomination has felt for him.
Taking it with a pinch of salt. Mm-hmm. Truly. What I mean by that is, it brings up a load of stuff. You know, you find yourself, or I find myself saying how much, look, I've dreamed of Oscars since I was a kid. I mean, and not in relation
to,
well, it's not even that, it's not in relation to myself, but in relation to, I wonder what it's like, not I wonder would I ever, I wonder what it would be like for me. But one of my clearest memories of the Oscar ceremony as a child was seeing Daniel Day-Lewis. I think I was probably about 11 or 12, winning the Oscar for My Left Foot, which I had seen My Left Foot at that stage when I was 11 or 12, and had been so moved by it. And that was maybe 4 years before I ever did my first acting class or even thought of being an actor. So just, you know, I kind of have my own understanding of fame or the dynamics of fame, why the world leads into fame, how we like putting people on a pedestal. The reverse of that, the shadow side of that, is that we like also tearing people down from pedestals. Then we love seeing a resurgence and all. I kind of have my own personal, from the inside, understanding of all that stuff. And so with that in mind, that's the taking it with a large pinch of salt, but just appreciating it as a moment in time. It'll all be over, as we know, in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
This will all be done in 6 weeks. And it'll be something that I will just classify as memory. But being in it, I'm experiencing it. I'm feeling like I'm experiencing it with a certain amount of light.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling too much desperation around it. Yeah. I'm very grateful for the moment.
Enjoying the ride.
I'm very grateful for the moment because I've been doing films, you know, for 20, 25 years. I've been an actor now. And, you know, I've done enough films, Clayton, that haven't worked. I've done enough films that either didn't find an audience or found an audience and the audience hated it. Or, you know, things that you can really clearly classify as not having worked. And every time I've worked on a film that hasn't worked, it's not been as the result of a lack of effort or a lack of passion. Every time a filmmaker goes to work, any time a cast and a crew get together, everyone has aspirations.
Yeah.
Everyone wants it to find an audience. Everyone wants to feel like they're part of something that has a bit of meaning, even if that meaning is just entertaining an audience. And it doesn't always work that way. So at its simplest form, long-winded answer, I'm trying to see if you can ask one question and we can do the whole hour. In its simplest form, to be part of Banshees and have worked with a cast and crew that I really have a very deep affection for, and then now seeing that film go out into the world and find an audience and be received in the way it's been, it's magic, you know? And I mean, the morning of the nominations, Because I have wondered through the years, if I was ever in that position where there was a chance of getting a nomination for an Oscar, what would I do? Would I go to bed and wait for the publicist to call at 5 a.m? Would I stay up and watch? I was like,
wait,
no,
are you telling me you didn't get up in 2008 for In Bruges? Like,
I mean, there's still part of me that goes, I'm not supposed to be at any of this part.
Yeah.
You know, there's still part of me. I have this kind of outsider narrative, which is kind of bollocks, bullshit as well. But this time I thought, it was a little bit the night before Christmas, and I thought, what am I going to do? I'll stay up and watch it. My youngest boy was with me. He's so excited about all this.
As you should be.
Absolutely. And I have to be very careful that I don't spend my time kicking over sandcastles with him and going, look, none of it means anything. And I'm trying to find strike the chord between, it's, we all know what the important things in life, truly in the living of a life are, right? And it's not this. Yeah. Having said that, it's a lovely moment and I find myself grateful for it. So he went to sleep. I got him up. Kerry lives close to me. Kerry Condon, who plays my sister, I should say I play her brother in the film. She lives close to me. So Kerry texted me and said, what are you going to do? Are you going to watch it? I think I'll go to bed, but I don't know if I'll be able to sleep. And I said, she lives close. I said, well, listen, my two sisters, a brother-in-law, Henry's with me. We're all going to get up and watch it. Just come around. So 5 o'clock in the morning, knock on the door. I opened the door. Kerry was there. Darkness of night.
Pajamas or just...
Clothes. No. She was denim on denim. I don't know why that's close, but it felt kind of close. Something very, very cozy about, she was denim on denim. And she came in and the kettle went on. I made 4 cups of tea. I had a box of Ferrero Rocher in the pantry. When the Ferrero Rocher comes out, you know, it's a serious occasion. So the Ferrero Rocher came out and we watched it. And she was first up, I think.
It was very
sweet. And we all had high fives. And then I saw Paul Mescal get in, which I was delighted for. And then I saw Quiet Girl get in, which I was thrilled for. Yeah. I mean, and
first Irish film to make the short
first
list.
Irish language film to get an Oscar nomination as Best International Picture was just extraordinary. And then I saw some video footage on Twitter of a bunch of Irish sitting in a cinema. It's called the Stella Cinema in Rathmines, which is a beautiful cinema. Did you see that footage on Twitter?
I didn't.
Oh, I'll get it up for you, man.
I can watch it.
Can I show it to you now?
Absolutely.
Let me see. It is so beautiful. Because it was the last of the five as well that was mentioned. Yeah. So you see all these people. Wait, you hear the cheer.
Alphabetical order.
So we all watched it, man, and we had high fives and we had hugs and then we went back to bed. And it was very sweet. So if we can...
You were able to go back to sleep.
Yeah, I did go back to sleep. Yeah, for an hour and then I had to get Henry back up for school. But so if we can maintain a sweetness through it all, do you know what I mean? Without being too highbrow or too serious about it and just enjoy it, you know, for what it is, as I say, a moment in time.
When you heard, while you're pulling that up, when you heard Brendan... Gleason and Barry Keoghan's name, were you
thrilled? Thrilled. And I mean,
and look, it was both of them. It was, you know, both of them made it.
Yeah. And you may not be surprised because we're aware of all the energy going up to it, right? Yeah. So I'm not going to go here and go, I was totally surprised. Like, that'd be disingenuous, right? And I tried to be as, tried to exercise as little of that as possible.
Yeah.
But you're still shocked.
Yeah.
So, not fully surprised, but still shocked. Shocked to see Brennan's name. Shocked to see Barry's name. Shocked to see mine. Shocked Martin. To hear Kerry's. Shocked. Actually, Martin was the only one I wasn't shocked.
Really?
Yeah. Director. Yes, I was. Director. Yes, I was. No. Director. Yes, I was. Because I think what happens with Martin a little bit, you know, Clayton, is that he's such an extraordinary writer.
Yeah.
That people find it hard to look past the pen.
Yeah.
Do you know? And I think he's now, from my money, he's an extraordinary director as well. I mean, he designed every shot, every frame, as directors, of course, always do. But he really was meticulous. He really knew how he wanted the film to look, how he wanted it to feel. And even the design, Carter Burwell's music, was so strange. It was so kind of otherworldly. It dropped us into kind of the folklorish, mythological aspect of this film, which is set in a real world, but also heightened, of course. But so I was shocked when Martin got, not the screenplay,
but director.
But I think it's in the same sense as well, this lack of, which, look, there can only be five, and it's not, you know, it's not a science. So there's no, this person should have definitely been in, that person shouldn't ever in any category as far as I'm concerned. But I would have loved Ben Davis to get a nomination. And I think what happened with Ben is a little bit of what I say happens with Martin. The natural world was so prevalent and was so overwhelmingly beautiful that I think people thought that there wasn't much lighting, cinematographical lighting going on. But it was like a Vermeer, some of the stuff interior.
It was interesting. I was having a conversation with someone recently and it was one of the question marks of award season. How did Ben Davis's cinematography not like catch on. That's like an automatic, like that we have to do.
Yeah. This. And I think it's because of the beauty of the natural world, you know, and there were so many kind of extraordinary shots of the vast and yet intimate topography of, check this out. It's so cool.
Great that it was the last film as well. And they're clapping everyone else, fair play to you. Is this it? What?
That's amazing.
Isn't that so sweet?
Yeah. That's incredible. Big movie theater.
Huh?
Big movie theater.
Yeah, it's a lovely theater. So that's all family and friends of people that, and I'm not joking, I don't want to get all quaint and Ireland is such a small, you know, but we are a small island and there is a sense of community at home that's really profound. It's one of the things that I miss most, you know, living in a more individualistic society over here is the sense of community at home. So, yeah, that tickled my heart when I saw that.
Well, congratulations to Ireland and to you as well.
Thanks, man.
But going back to you, you had a busy year after Yang, the Batman, 13 Lives, and Banshees of Inisherin. Are you having the time of your life right now making movies?
Totally,
it looks like it.
Yeah, feel spoiled rotten. And I mean, I want to say none of it's by design. I don't really, you know, I've been asked through the years various times in interviews, what project do you feel you want to make or who do you want to work with? And I've never really had an answer to that. Yeah. I just, honest to God, trusted in what's been in front of me. Sometimes I've gone to work just for the money. Sometimes I've gone to work, you know, the money has never been bad for me over the last 20 years, but sometimes I've gone to work more because I have a deep passion for the project. And I felt like, those four films you mentioned, I didn't even think that they'd be coming out within the same kind of calendar year.
Yeah.
And they were all so different. You know, the characters were all so different. The filmmakers had such a unique perspective and aesthetic style to their filmmaking, particularly Coganada.
Yeah.
You know, I love him as a filmmaker. I love how understated he is, how gentle he is as a man and an artist. And that translates into the aesthetic of his film and also just the emotional and psychological tonality of his films. Yeah. Columbus, I thought, was extraordinary.
Yeah.
You know, he's not didactic in any way, you know, and he doesn't try and direct you toward any particular feeling. He gently puts his stories forward. And I found myself leaning into Columbus. I've been spoiled rotten, man. Yeah. It was a great run.
Also points to the need for a best choreography category.
Oh, yeah.
Dance moves in After Yang.
Oh,
man.
I can't remember the choreographer's name now. Shame on me, but she was amazing. Yeah. The opening to that film was so
great
cool.
Moves, man. Up there with Oscar Isaac and Ex Machina, for sure.
Yes, yes. Oh, Ex Machina, what a film that is.
Yeah,
I think Coganada had said, actually, I think the choreographer had said that the film, it was like confetti getting popped into the air, and then the rest of the film was the confetti slowly coming down.
Yeah,
which was a lovely kind of
absolutely
articulation.
Oh, it's awesome. Something we had noticed recently, connected to you and some of your past films, you have made us cry in a lot of movies. Connected to dead animals and pets, like you're connected to these animals in the movies. The lobster.
Yeah,
how we lose a dog. Yeah. Spoiler alert, Jenny in Banshees. You are someone that wears your heart on your sleeve, and we see a lot of that when you're – anyone who's interacted with you over the years. You have a deep love for animals. I can only imagine that's maybe why, because you feel that kinship. But are you a big like dog, cat, animal person?
I have two cats. I have two cats that I love, brother and sister, Murphy and Mia. I grew up with dogs. I love animals. Yeah, I love animals. Yeah, I do. I adore animals. Yeah. And I love working with them because they're incredibly honest.
Is Jenny a diva now?
Jenny's a tricky one. I hope she's not listening to this. Jenny, I saw a picture of her recently and she looks like she's living good. She's quite a bit more robust, Rubenesque,
Shall
I say, than I remember. And she's in a field somewhere, I think in Ireland. She's out to pasture. She's earned her stripes, and she's in an early retirement.
So we shouldn't expect her at the Oscars.
I don't think so. No, that'd be amazing, man. Little Dickie Bo.
Yeah. Oh man. Going back to the Batman, because you know you're fantastic as Oz/the Penguin.
Thanks.
Unrecognizable. Big announcement coming today, Batman 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, have you been asked to be in it?
No, not yet. I mean, I know that the idea. I'm going to do a show.
You're such a good actor, by the way. I enjoy this. You don't know anything about Batman 2?
No, nothing.
No, nothing.
Yeah. Honest to God, on my life. Hmm. I know it's happening.
Yeah.
And I know that Matt Reeves is deep in writing it. But the only thing I do know. And I would tell you I know something and tell you that I'm not telling you rather than say I don't.
I enjoy it.
The idea of, because I'm going to do this, I think it's going to be 8-part thing for HBO.
Yeah.
But around Oz's kind of rise into power, filling that power vacuum that was created when Falcone was killed. Matt's idea originally was to have the Penguin show begin about a week after the end of the Batman film. And then, if it works, if the trajectory is interesting enough and if the audience go for it and we do our jobs right, have the second film, Penguin feature in the second film and pick up where the HBO show will end.
Okay.
So I don't know how much he'll be in it. I'd love to be in it. I loved working with Matt. I just think he did such an extraordinary job in that film.
Yeah.
But what did it take today? You tell me the announcement.
Batman 2 coming in 2025. July.
2025.
July 2025. Are you available to do the Batman for July 2025?
Bear with me.
Yeah. We're checking the schedule.
March.
March
2025, outside of that. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I'd love to do it. That was a blast.
Yeah.
And I wanted more, I would have loved to have more scenes in the first film. I understood that he wasn't the primary villain. But when I got into the makeup and when I saw the job that Mike Marino had done in designing Oz, because, you know, as I said before, I've never been able to declare less ownership.
Mm.
For a part I've played than that one.
That's awesome.
You know, because of what Mike did. I mean, it's at least 50-50.
Have you had conversations with James and Peter over at now the DC studios that's going to be doing? They announced their entire, most of their slate of the upcoming movies and TV shows they'll be working on. Have you had any conversations?
No, none.
And then, so your conversations have been with Matt mostly?
Yeah, and I haven't talked to him about Lauren LeFranc. Has been writing the Penguin show, and she's going to be the showrunner.
And you're getting ready to shoot like soon, right?
Yeah. I think we start on the 27th or 28th of Feb.
Okay,
so it'll be a lot of back and forth with all this madness going
Oscars,
on. Yeah. So
luncheon, go get into Penguin makeup, like come back.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah, I'll be zipping out of my bodysuit, taking off all Mission Impossible, taking off my head.
How long does it take to get into all that?
Like the start, the first time we did the makeup was 4 hours, and then they got it down to about just sub. I mean, we'd start the clock every day just sub two, like 1:59:32 or something like that, which is fine. Clayton, it gives me a chance to learn my lines and get ready for the day and
just relax.
Might have had a nap or two as well in the chair.
That's good.
Yeah.
One thing I want to ask you, and never like to get personal, but one thing that I've always loved about you is. You're a great dad, and I know that you've been a very a great spoken advocate for kids with special needs. My son has autism.
Oh, does he?
Yeah,
he does. How old is he?
He just turned 8 the other day.
How's he doing?
He's doing great.
How does it present, if I may ask?
Oh, yeah. I'll be honest, sometimes I think he's punking me. I think he's like...
Sure.
Yeah, I think putting this on as an act. Sure. Because he just says things. I'm like... People shouldn't know that.
A child's capabilities are a mystery that we have to be careful trying to unearth, because
you just never know too much
on a child or not enough on a child. And, I find it's a tricky one.
But he's verbal and he is. There's a lot of things that I'm sure
social cues are tricky for him.
Social cues are a little tricky, but he's super personable, super friendly. He'll go up to you and talk.
Lovely.
He's the best.
Look, man, we're all fucked. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not saying your son's fucked. I'm saying we've all got issues, you know? I mean, human beings are on the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Human beings are on the spectrum. We're all, the spectrum of humanity is a obviously multifaceted and very complex spectrum.
Yeah.
So some are more so on spectrums than others, of course, and there are clinical diagnoses for some things, but there should be a clinical diagnosis for the condition of being human.
Yeah.
My son, James, is amazing. He's 19 now. He's an extraordinary young man. And he's had, you know, more challenges straight out of the gate than most of us.
Yeah.
You know, and he's incredibly brave. He's an absolute inspiration to me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
My question for you is, I think this has always been what I would love to see, is just more awareness on people with disabilities. Because, you know, when you have children that you love them, I always think about the future. What happens when he's 19, when he's out in the world?
Yeah.
What is something that you would love to see, like, the world adopt? I mean, is it just basic knowledge of?
Yeah, I think it's just, I think human beings are at our best when we're curious about others, you know?
Yeah.
And curious about ourselves, not to the degree of self-obsession, but, you know, when we question or we wonder why we are the way we are as individuals in the first person, why I am the way I am, why I feel the way I feel, why I respond the way I respond, I think there's incredible power in the vein of liberation in that. And so I think to extend that curiosity to the greater environment and to the world in general, to our immediate environment, I think that's when we're at our best. I think when we're really trying to understand each other and when we're curious about the other and not fearful of the other. And so with that in mind, I think what you just said about people knowing more, learning more. And of course, then there is the social pragmatics of interaction, real world interaction, the workplace, finding jobs, education, for those who are differently abled is huge and really important. And I'm a supporter of the Special Olympics. You know about the Special Olympics? Yeah. I mean, the work that the Special Olympics does as an organization globally is extraordinary. Yeah. And obviously, you know, at the core of the Special Olympics is the need and the importance of absolute inclusion, you know? So the energy around the Special Olympics is an energy that I wish was more prevalent in the world, because it's funny. I don't know. Like, what should talk about? Obviously, we're at our best as human beings. I say when we're curious, but we're at our best when we're considerate. And curiosity holds within it the nature of consideration. If you're curious about something, you're considering that thing. So that's what I mean by curiosity. Not to even create more otherness or not to objectify, but the kind of curiosity that means you're considering really from your heart another person and who they are and what they're capable of and their joys and their sadnesses and their trials and tribulations. And so the energy, you know, I've been to three Special Olympics ceremonies, opening ceremonies, and been there for the games. One was Beijing, Dublin, Ireland, and then when it was on here as well. And the energy of inclusion is just extraordinary. So that would be my dream for a world that we ever inch more toward existing in that space.
Thank you. Thank you very much for saying that.
Of course,
sharing that.
Of course,
bro. I have two last things. One is going to be asking you to dig down deep inside to say some nice things about Martin McDonagh and Brendan Gleeson, especially, because
might be a bit tired of that, I know, playing that record.
I know
that vinyl is scratched at this stage.
Martin McDonagh, third movie with him, Seven Psychopaths in Bruges, correct? And then now Banshees.
Yeah.
Brendan Gleeson. Yeah, this, your buddy comedy. Who would have thunk that you guys would just make magic together consistently? I just need this every few years. But sometimes the love is so deep, you can do anything together.
Yeah.
And there's a definite special friendship between you and Martin and Brendan. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I knew my, I mean, we're three very different fellas. I say, well, what do I mean? We just, you know, we present very different. We've got different perspectives on life and all, but there's some kind of deep commonality there. And I don't know what it is. I don't know how to quantify it or articulate it, but there's a deep commonality there that means that, you know, it's not like as a result of In Bruges, was there a shorthand on Seven Psychopaths between me and Martin, or because of In Bruges, was there a shorthand between me and Brendan on Seven Psychopaths? The shorthand was there from day one. You know, we didn't really grow into it. Yeah, we're more familiar with each other and stuff, and maybe a little bit more comfortable with each other based on a shared history. But the shorthand was always there. And we just, it's just a joy working with the two of them. You know, there's no bullshit. I mean, we have a good laugh together. We all take the work very, very serious, as in we apply ourselves as much as we can, and we're asking questions, and Brendan's always digging. Martin is an extraordinary writer, and he's capable of creating these, you know, at turns hilarious and humane, and then macabre and brutal and cruel but kind worlds, and lulls you into a sense of security with the comedic aspect, and then he hits you over the head with some kind of hard-boiled truths as well. And I just love his writing. I saw Six Shooter was the first thing of Martin's that I'd ever seen, the short film that won the best short of the Oscars that year. And Brendan was in that. And they're just, I mean, I'd love to not wait 14 years again to work with Brendan, you know?
I mean, if they're watching, get on it.
Yeah, yeah, get on it, lads. Get the quill out, Martin.
That's Colin Farrell, Oscar nominee for the film The Banshees of Inisherin. Distributed by Searchlight Pictures, the film is also streaming now on HBO Max. Babylon is an epic tale that traces the rise and fall of multiple people during the 1920s and 30s of old Hollywood as it transitions from silent films to talkies. Written and directed by Oscar winner Damien Chazelle, it stars Diego Calva, Margot Robbie, Brad Pitt, and Jean Smart. Distributed by Paramount Pictures, it's been nominated for 3 Academy Awards this year: production design, costume design, and original score, for today's guest, Justin Hurwitz. Hurwitz has worked with Chazelle on all of his films thus far: Whiplash, La La Land, First Man, and now Babylon. His love for music began in Los Angeles, where he was born, before moving to Wisconsin. Still, legends like John Williams, who happens to be nominated alongside him this year for The Fabelmans, remains his greatest inspiration. We recently sat down with Hurwitz, who's coming off his 4th career Oscar nod for Babylon. The Oscar winner that's behind iconic songs and music for La La Land discusses working on the 188-minute old Hollywood epic, how he got his start by writing episodes for TV shows such as The Simpsons, The League, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. We began by talking about the moment this year he got to meet his idol, John Williams.
Well, John Williams is the reason that I'm a film composer. I think he's the reason that film music, that film music meant something to me. I think his music is the music that I noticed, the music that made me understand the power of film music. Growing up with movies like Jurassic Park and E.T. and, and scores like that, that the music is just so inextricable from the movie and just you never, ever forget it. I had never met him, but after the Golden Globes, I sprinted across the room to meet him. I didn't know if he was there. I thought maybe he wasn't there. Yeah. And then Spielberg was giving the last speech of the night, and he said, Johnny Williams, and he pointed to the corner of the room, and I was like, he's here? He's here? And the second Spielberg stopped talking, I jumped up from my seat and I ran across the room, and they were like sort of trying to whisk him out of the room, but I was like, John, I'm so sorry. I know you want to get going. I just had to meet you. You are the reason. I told him I wouldn't be a film composer if it weren't for you, and that's the absolute truth.
Yeah. Oh man. And to very cordial, friendly thank you. And
oh yeah, he was incredibly sweet, and I got a quick picture with him.
Ah, there you go.
And then he got to go home.
That's for the album, man. That's such a good story. So let's talk about this Damien Chazelle character you've been hanging out with a lot lately. You know, you guys came here together. I don't know how many people know this, because I'm just, you know, sometimes this empty well of, I say, useless knowledge sometimes, but I'm such a big fan of The League, and a lot of people don't know that you're responsible for The League. And I'm just like, you don't get to see too many people wear different hats, especially from the artisans, you know, writer, director, producer, actors. Those are like, people put those together, but you are also a big fan of writing, and you've done some great stuff. Do you and Damien just fit together that way? Do you feel like you guys will ever collaborate together on a script, or you may ever step into a directing chair?
I don't know about, I don't work with Damien at all on the writing side. For people who don't know The League,
people know The League.
People know The League.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, if you want to feel good for those people who may not.
And they're not as cool as you or me. But the FX, it was an FX comedy that I was contributing to my first few years in LA. It's a very weird, sort of like side job thing I had. When I first moved out here, I had studied film music. I wanted to be a film composer. Absolutely. That was always what I wanted to do. And Damien wanted to be a director, and I was waiting. We had been roommates in college, and I was just sort of like waiting on him to make movies that I could score.
You're like, hurry up, man. Get to it.
Yeah. So I kind of fell into contributing. I wouldn't even say you said responsible for the league. I think that's a little, giving me a little too much credit. I was contributing to some comedies because I'd written for a comedy magazine in college. And so I got to know some of the grads of that. And I came out here and I didn't have any, I wasn't making a living. And like I said, Damien didn't have movies for me to score. So I was like, well, maybe I could like write for some of their shows. So I basically harassed people into getting coffee with me.
Yeah.
And then some people were nicer than others. And a few people like Jeff and Jackie Schaefer, who had created the league, were like, if you have ideas for the show, you know, you can email them to us. So I was like, well, I'm doing nothing and I need something to do. I need something, a way to make money.
Pay rent, man.
Exactly. So I just started emailing ideas like, oh, here's a story idea for this character, that character. And eventually they started, buying a few ideas, and I didn't get a credit the first year, and then the second year, I think they let me kind of help write a story or whatever. So I did it for a couple of years until Whiplash got off the ground. And once Whiplash got off the ground, I had music to do. Whiplash led pretty directly to La La Land. And once there was music to do, that's all I wanted to do. I'm by far better at music than writing jokes for sitcoms or anything else.
Yeah.
And I'm way, way more passionate about music. I mean, it's truly what I love doing. But it was a very fun, weird way for me to pay my bills my first few years. And I'm very grateful that I got to do that.
Yeah, it's awesome. Listen, when I think about the last decade of music, and I'm a very passionate awards enthusiast, but cinephile when it comes to scores and music. I just it's always been kind of like I'm a sucker for a good swell. And when I think of some of the best in the last decade, and this, I always say this is indicative of how good it is if I tell people like the name of the track, but you know, the epilogue from La La Land always comes to mind, and the landing from First Man. Some of the best orchestrated notes, written notes of any film in the last decade. Two of those are, you know, those are, they're yours. And then Babylon is so different from those. What do you, I feel like every great artist has something embedded deep within them that they want to get out. They're just waiting for the right type of vehicle. Obviously you and Damien both are a big, aficionados of jazz, and you love jazz. Is there something that you're dying to put together for a type of movie that, or that maybe they're even doing right now?
I don't know about what I want to do going forward. I mean, definitely I want to keep doing different things, and I want to keep trying, learning new things. Maybe getting more into production, and I'd love to do something more electronic. That'd be interesting. But yeah, I'd say Babylon was definitely a new kind of, I was scratching a different kind of itch, in the sense that I've always been interested in dance music. Like, you know, I grew up with like 90s and millennial dance music, like Ace of Base and Franz Ferdinand, all these like fun things. So to get to do, you know, kind of that like pounding four on the floor thing, to get to do dance hi-hats, to get to play with those feelings, not with the electronic soundscape, but with more acoustic instruments, but still play with, you know, these drum breaks and drops and bass drops, and using horns as risers, you know, kind of almost the way you have in EDM and stuff, where you have a rising, then the drop, to get to try to play with those feelings, give us that feeling, but using horns and using acoustic instruments. That was something that was really fun, and like I'd never written music that had that kind of feel to it. So that was kind of one of the fun areas that we got to explore in this movie.
Yeah. And just another question about the movie. You know, the movie came in December and generated a lot of conversation. And I always say I love a good movie that is divided. I don't need everyone to tell me it's good, but when you have a movie that some people are like, what is this? And other people are like, this is cinema, this is brilliant, I'll take that movie any day than something that's just like, it's fine. Were you bummed at all by some of, did you read any of the reception, or were you just or were you bracing for it and knew this was ambitious and it was going to hit for some and not for others?
I definitely, I knew that it was going to be a divisive movie. Mm-hmm. I think we all knew that.
Yeah.
It's disappointing.
It wasn't from the elephant poop. Like, it's just right from there you do.
I mean, from the elephant poop through all the rest of the bodily fluids.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we always knew the movie wasn't going to be for everybody. It's definitely disappointing that more people haven't seen it in the theaters. I hope now that it's coming out on, you know, home video and stuff, more people will be able to discover it. I wish the... I've read a lot of the reviews. There are people who absolutely love it. There are people who hate it. There's a lot in between. I think it's... I mean, the movie has like, so it's so stunning. You know, what Damien's made. I think it's so beautiful. It's so rich. It's not a conventional storyline. It's definitely, the tone is, takes you so many places. It's a comedy, it's a tragedy. It's almost a horror movie. It's just there. It's so unexpected, so many unexpected things, that I think it can be tough to get on the right wavelength for it, but I'm on the wavelength for it. Like, I love this movie. I really, really love this movie. And I'm grateful when I hear people that, you know, are ready for the roller coaster that it is.
That's Oscar-nominated composer Justin Hurwitz from the film Babylon, now out in theaters. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Zach Levin edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest awards predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. So for Jazz Tankay, Janelle Riley, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.